WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me.
I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth,
very
Charlie
good.
Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it's really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going to be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Monday Night Talk. My name is Kevin Tachi. Thank you for keeping your radio dial set here for the program. We have a great show for you. Starting out after we check traffic with Nancy, we have Arthur Boyle, a good friend, Arthur Boyle. You know Arthur from not only his time on the radio, as he does stuff from time to time with Bill Wilhelm, calling sports. Arthur, of course, is an elected official in the town of Pembroke, and he's going to throw his hat in the ring. He's going to go from the Board of Selectmen to maybe being a town clerk. So we'll talk with him about that decision. Then we have joining us is Plymouth County District Attorney Tim Cruz, he's here early, so he's kind of warming up in the bullpen, looking forward to talking to the district attorney. Talk with him about a series that is running. I don't know if it's just running here in the South Shore or if it's something that's shared around the Commonwealth. I know there's something in the access in local cable or in cable access called Telview Connect, where you can share a program across the country. So I'm kind of curious as to if that is being shared. Talk a little bit about not only the program, but the most recent program that they did, Episode 6, which is actually a Sports Smart video that the district attorney's office had produced. We'll get into the nuts and bolts about that because it was a powerful video. And I thought it was so powerful. I actually tried to have not only the DA, but one of the individuals who was in it. We weren't able to have both, but I think the DA is going to be able to really represent the message behind the video and the show itself. So he's going to be here to talk about that. And then we have Chip Faulkner. You know him? Chip, of course, with the Citizens for Limited Taxation. He's going to be joining us, and he has a whole list of things he wants to talk about, from toll roads to graduated taxes, you name it. We're going to sit down with Chip and chat with him about that. And then we have Arthur's son, Billy. Billy is going to be taking over the helm of the Pembroke Chamber. Peter Brown. Peter Brown, proud sponsor, Tiny and Sons Glass, proud sponsor of this show. Peter becoming, I believe, the chair of the Plymouth Area Chamber of Commerce. We'll talk to them about them getting involved. Why are they? These are two guys who actually do. My God, I think they're cloned, personally. I can't prove it. But they're everywhere. They serve on so they give of their time so willingly to help the community. And we're going to get a little bit of insight into that.
Years Brennan's has had many local employees that have helped make our family business successful on the South Shore and South Coast. Today, we've amassed a list of 25 of the best local tobacconists any smoke shop owner would be proud to have. But you can't have them because they work for Brennan's Smoke Shop. We're the best. These employees have made Brennan's Smoke Shop very successful. So this special radio ad goes out to Leo, Shane, Chris, Hannah, Bobby Joe, Mike M, Jen, Shay, Colleen, Kristen, Jessica, Courtney, Mary, Denise, Rachel K, Angela, Rachel B, Justin, Jesse, Chrissy, Katrina, Sarah, and of course, my lovely wife, Mallory. Would you all be my Valentines this year? Because I love you. Brennan's Smoke Shop. The sweetest smoke shop in Massachusetts. Customers must have a valid state or federal ID to enter the store. Visit us on the web or like us on Facebook.
Well, I got news for you. You can't have them.
The a part of the show. Call in and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
And we return to Monday Night Talk. And as I promised you in the intro, very interesting program that we have for you starting out. Now, again, it is going to be, it's going to be a boil and boil kind of bookend kind of a show. I've had two boils on the show at the same time where I had my next guest on, as well as his brother, who was looking to get on the school committee. He was successful. I don't think he had an opponent. But we have Arthur Boyle, great voice here on 959 WATD. You hear him doing the sports call. Also, an elected official in the town of Pembroke, and a selectman. Arthur, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing well tonight, Kevin. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Folks who don't know it, how long have you been involved with local politics?
34 years between my former hometown and my hometown of Pembroke. I've been 23 years in public office in Pembroke, 17 of which have been on the Board of Selectmen.
What is it about local politics that you like? What is it about getting involved and being a community leader?
You can get things done at the local level. As difficult as it is at the state and federal level, because you're one of a much bigger pool there, and the idea of being able to do things, you know, the pond cleanups and the sealing of the capping of the landfill, that kind of thing.
Would you say those are like memorable moments? What would be some of your most memorable moments serving as a selectman?
Well, one of my most memorable moments came as a loss. We had found out how kind the people of Pembroke could be when we lost a grandchild, as you remember, 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And people came out of the woodwork that we didn't even know. We hadn't lived here more than 15 years at the time. And people brought cakes and food and, you know, all sorts of things. And they were a great comfort. But the thing I remember most vividly as far as politics goes is the Silver Lake withdrawal. And that still brings up a sore spot in some people's minds. But I think the schools have proven both Silver Lake as a tri-town and Pembroke on its own have done remarkably well as two separate schools. And it's now a great sports rivalry, too.
Yeah, it is interesting. I was, you know, following some of the sports here in the South Shore and knowing how far Pembroke has come, and knowing that, you know, Silver Lake, Kingston, that there's a little bit of a rivalry there now.
Yeah, there is, and it's a natural rivalry. I mean, the towns abut one another. The kids that are in the vocational programs from Pembroke, many of them go to Silver Lake. So it's a natural rivalry.
Now, I recently heard a report right here on this radio station saying that you are throwing your hat in the ring to be town clerk in Pembroke. Is this true, and why?
It is true, and it's because it gives me an opportunity to be more hands-on, you know, and more day-to-day interaction with the people of the town. Mary Ann Smith has been the clerk for the past 10 years, and she's done a terrific job of making the office organized and well-run, and she's done a great job, as I say, and I think we need somebody with management and leadership skills to replace her. And I think that the folks will find out that I'm that person. I taught 4 or 5 years at Quincy College teaching state and local government. So I've got the experience to to combine with the 23 years I've spent in public office here. So it's a natural progression, really.
Well, what are your understanding of the duties of that particular office?
Well, I understand it's the keeper of the records, basically, for the town. And, you know, you've got other sidelines where they do marriages, they do dog licenses. There's all sorts of things that come under the town clerk. And I have a dear friend who's a town clerk over in another town. And she just said, you know, I asked her about it, you know, some months ago, and I said, what exactly do you do on a day-to-day basis? She says, everything. And
oh my.
That's pretty much accurate, I think.
So, are you looking forward to a challenge and an opportunity to help take that office to another level?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's some outreach that could be done a little bit more often, you know, getting into the high school as an example to register the seniors who become 18 or are becoming 18, maybe run a night in the library for kids from out of, you know, out of town that are, you know, they're Pembroke residents, but they're living at colleges in New Hampshire and Maine and Connecticut and so forth, and you could have a night at the library to bring those kids in. And I thought about opening a Saturday or two, you know, maybe 9 to 1 on a Saturday, every other Saturday or something like that, to give people a chance that are commuters that leave to go to Boston at 5:30 or 6 o'clock, and they don't get home until 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock at night. So they don't have the opportunity to get to town hall like many of us do. So I figured it would make it more convenient for them. And when we tried that with the recycling center, it worked. So if you make it, you know, if you make it easy to use, people will use it.
Let me ask you this. I know that there are some communities that have, because of finances, depending on how the town or the community is doing, some communities have cut back from 5 days a week to four because maybe there isn't enough foot traffic. What's the case in Pembroke, and how would that play a role if you were to do like Saturday hours?
Well, I think you could look at it and, you know, do Saturday hours and maybe cut back, you know, Friday and close at noontime or something like that. That'd be good for the employees, and it'd be good for the townspeople.
What other improvements would you like to make to the office of town clerk?
Well, I think all in all, it probably would make sense to if you could move it downstairs. And I know that that's a crowded area now, but it's... you know, it's the office that gets the most traffic, probably besides the treasurer, you know, in the building department. And they're both, the building department's on the first floor. So, you know, you get the elevator and it's a little temperamental.
Okay. We are speaking with Arthur Boyle, a good friend. And, of course, you've heard Arthur on this radio station for many years, not only as an elected official, but... a sports guy alongside of some greats like Bill Wilhelm when they're doing football and other coverage like that. We're talking with Arthur about his throwing a hat in the ring for town clerk, and I believe that's this spring. Now, what happens in regards to being a selectman? Now, are you up this year, or what happens? Are you not up for another year or two?
I wouldn't be up for another year, and I wouldn't hold both seats. I don't believe you can hold both seats.
So
I wouldn't even try.
So that's an interesting juxtaposition, because you can run for this office at being a qualified elected official, and then if you're successful, you basically can step away from, you give your resignation, and the town can do something in regards to filling your spot if they choose to.
Well, I always say nobody's irreplaceable, and that means not even me. So. You know, Mary Ann came into the job with no experience in the town clerk's office, and she's done a great job, as I said. And, you know, the office didn't skip a beat. And it would be, I think, the same with my situation. I would have to resign as a member of the Board of Selectmen, and they would probably put it on the next elected ballot that, rather than hold a special election, which would cost about... between $7,000 and $10,000 to run a special election.
Okay,
and that doesn't really make sense.
So I guess the thing I would ask you is, you talk about you know, Mary coming in and not having. I would think she'd have to gain some kind of certification from the state, though. No.
Yeah, there are certifications you can get in almost all the departments, but there's nothing that's, as far as I'm aware, there's nothing that prevents you from holding office. As a town clerk, just simply by winning the election. I think it's one of the many seats that you can just go in and you know, put your name out and hope that you do well. You know, assessors, Board of Assessors members are different because they've got certifications that they've got to get in order to be able to sign off on the, you know, paperwork they're responsible for.
Okay. I guess I would ask you this. So this is basically an open seat. Are you expecting more people like yourself to be throwing their hat in the ring? Do you think this is going to be kind of a number of folks getting in trying to be the next town clerk?
I think there may be another one or two, perhaps.
Okay.
You know, I don't I don't keep track of what the other folks do too much.
Right.
We've got a campaign to run. You've got some, you know, votes to gather and, you know, operations to run. And, you know, you hope that you finish first.
When are town elections, by the way, for folks who are just listening and maybe not be from Pembroke and don't know?
May 12th.
Okay.
It's a Saturday.
All right. So it's a bit of a ways away. And, you know, and then I believe that Pembroke is a town meeting form of government, so you'd be very active during that if you were a town clerk, right?
Yes, you would be. It's very much so. You'd be recording everything that goes on at the town meeting, basically.
Wait a minute, Arthur, don't you have enough fun already being a selectman and partaking in town meeting? You want to have even more fun?
Well, I'll tell you, it has been fun, and it's been very rewarding, you know, from a personal satisfaction point of view. And I've met some great people along the way that I probably wouldn't have met had I not been involved in public life. So it's been a real kick.
Again, speaking with Arthur Boyle, a good friend, a Pembroke selectman, running for town clerk in Pembroke May 12th, be on the ballot. You know, later on this evening, we're going to have your son, Bill's going to be in, taking the helm of the Pembroke Chamber of Commerce, a great business guy. Give me your thoughts on Bill and watching him grow and as he's becoming a natural-born leader like yourself.
Well, he just got married now, too, you know.
That's
he just
right.
got married in October over in Ireland at a destination wedding. And he married a lovely young lady from Pembroke, Maureen Bates.
Yep.
And they're doing very well together. And, you know, they're both working at their careers, their chosen careers. And As Bill's mother is, I'm very proud of him. And the Chamber of Commerce, I think, will be the beneficiary of, you know, some hard work. Because not because he's mine, but he's a good kid.
Yeah, he's a great guy. And he's a hell, you know, he does a great job during the softball tournaments that we have. He's great in that number four hole. We need to,
yeah, the fire department and the police department have offered him a contract.
Well, they need somebody. And you know, what's even funnier is that my next guest coming up in a few moments, expecting Plymouth County DA Tim Cruz in here. We know that he's played the hot corner the past couple of years for the Pembroke Fire and Police. So it'll be interesting to have a little fun with Tim before we get into our conversation.
Well, Tim's still got it. He's still got the youthful spirit and the athleticism, and that left me several years ago. So I don't expect to compete with my son Bill or with the DA.
Well, anything you want to say in closing? And again, I thank you very much. I know you're going to be running off to a meeting in a moment, but we thank you for giving us a little bit of time here on Monday Night Talk.
Well, I just hope the voters of Pembroke will look at my record of accomplishment over the years and my record of calling people back. And I pride myself on always calling people back. The answer can't always be yes. Sometimes it's got to be no, but it'll be an honest answer to the best of my ability given to you. And I think that's all you can ask in a public official.
There he is, Mr. Arthur Boyle, looking for your vote. He'll be out there campaigning, I'm sure, hitting the trail in the coming days and weeks. We are going to step aside, and when we come back, we're expecting to have a Plymouth County District Attorney, Tim Cruz, in studio. So stay tuned. You are listening to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD.
Is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
This weight loss segment brought to you by Signature Healthcare, providing a team approach to weight loss, including medical and surgical options. Here's Dr. Deborah Abeles, chief of Signature Healthcare's Weight and Wellness Center in Brockton.
When it comes to medical or surgical weight loss, patients now have more options than ever before. At our practice, we're always trying to guide patients to the option that makes the most sense for them. So for some, that may mean surgery to help them lose weight, put their diabetes into remission, or reduce the number of medications that they take. However, there are also less invasive options, like our 12-week doctor-supervised medical weight loss program. Patients work with our dietitian and lifestyle counselors while receiving ongoing physician consultation to make sure they are losing weight safely and effectively.
To learn more about Dr. Abeles and see if Signature Healthcare's medical and surgical weight loss approaches may be right for you, visit mysignaturecare.org/weight. weight loss.
McGuigan's Pub in downtown Whitman is a great place to unwind any night of the week. Stop in for Singo on Monday night. There's the always popular Irish Sessions every Tuesday night, half-price pizza every Wednesday night, and Friday and Saturday nights feature the best in live entertainment. Catch your favorite game on McGuigan's 8 big flat screens and enjoy a pint at their beautiful 54-foot mahogany bar. Whether you're a regular or coming in for the first time, you're always a friend of McGuigan's Pub, 546 Washington Street, Whitman Center.
Be a part of the show. Call and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk.
All right, we are back here on Monday Night Talk. And just a quick note, I totally forgot. I apologize, Arthur, if you're still listening. It's actually the 41st wedding anniversary of Arthur and his wife, Helen. So, happy anniversary. 41 years. Wow. That's fantastic. I apologize. The next time we have you on air, I'll make sure that I say it, even though it probably won't be until 6 months from now. So we'll just keep that in mind. This next segment, I want to kind of set this up before I kind of give a formal introduction. This radio station is one of many media outlets that has done its best to try to at least try to get the information, the word out in regards to what we're dealing with when we're talking about with the drug and opioid epidemic. It's an epidemic, and it's not just here on the South Shore. It's not here in the Commonwealth, but it's something that we're seeing across the nation. And so, in my other source of employment, media, I happen to do programming for the station, or at least I assist in gathering programming to put on air for our viewers. And I not too long ago came across this fantastic program that was put together not only by the Plymouth County District Attorney's Office, but also in conjunction with, I believe, the Plymouth County Sheriff's Department. But I also received a friend of mine who does a lot of great video work, happened to put out a little bit of a teaser reel on this. And I saw it and I go, wow, this is fantastic. We already run this show, and the show is called Breaking the Cycle. But this was something that was, I believe, commissioned by the district attorney's office. What we're going to do right now is we're going to play just a little snippet so you can get an idea of this fantastic and powerful program. It's called the Sports Smart documentary, and it's also part of the Breaking the Cycle series, if you will, Ben.
My brother went on to be an unbelievable football player at Brockton High School, was fortunate enough to get a scholarship to the University of Iowa. He hurt his shoulders. I'm sure that you all have heard of this. They prescribed him Percocets.
People that, for the most part, that are passing away from this problem are between the ages of 20 and 29.
My younger brother was a star athlete. Freshman going into sophomore year, he had a string of kind of injuries that led to him being prescribed pain medication three or four times over that time, whether it was a broken collarbone, he broke his hand, I think he tore his knee up.
Our brain doesn't know the difference between prescription like OxyContin or oxycodone or Vicodin or codeine and heroin.
So the decisions that you're making and the decisions that you're going to make in your life, I want you to clearly understand.
We were duped by Purdue Pharmaceutical Company that set up a whole charade that virtually forced physicians into changing their practices.
If we continue to break that stigma and continue to raise awareness and say, yes, not a single one of us has not been affected by this.
Everything that he had was gone within a matter of like 18 months.
The decisions that you make and the effect that they have on your mom and dad or your loved ones and how much it affects your loved ones.
We need to continue to go after the drug dealers, the traffickers who are peddling this poison that is killing people right now.
How many people in the stands want to grow up to be a drug addict? I don't see any hands. Because that's never anybody's goal in life, right?
Joining us here in studio is Plymouth County District Attorney Tim Cruz, District Attorney, thank you for joining us. here in studio. As I said earlier in the show, the hope was I was hoping to get one of the main voices we heard in there, Steve Marciano. I've had many conversations with Steve, not necessarily about this, more so when about the Rocky Marciano statue, sure, and that saga and the family finally seeing it come to Brockton. But Steve's such a great guy, and knowing that he and his family are dealing with this, and same with the, is it my saying, how do you say Kevin's last name?
Abitable,
okay. Knowing that these families are going through this, give me, where did the concept of this video come from? How did you commission and put this together?
Well, I think it started myself and Sheriff McDonald, actually, back in June of 2015, put together the Plymouth County Drug Abuse Task Force. And it was at that time that we were trying to put together one-stop shopping. How do we figure out, how do we get in front of this problem that we're having, not just in Plymouth County, but it's everywhere. Like, sure, you said, it's across the country. So one of the things we decided to do was to develop a cable show whereby we'd be talking to the people in our community who are working against this terrible, insidious problem that we're dealing with. So we've had a number of shows with Chief Boteri from Plymouth, Chief Allen from East Bridgewater, Dr. Dan Muse, you heard also there from, mm-hmm, Signature Healthcare, and also Steve Marciano, who is just such a dynamic, powerful speaker, who when he speaks, when we go to schools and he speaks and I'm there, you could hear a pin drop. I mean, everybody is riveted on every word that he says because it's coming from the heart, and people really, I think, want to get something out of him. So we started it from that, and it's kind of grown into a number of different things that we do all around the county.
I remember doing the story when Peter Marciano passed away, and there was a light. It was very quietly known that what he may have passed it, and it was one of those things that folks were like going, will the family come out and say this is what it is? Because it would serve as a powerful message,
right,
that anybody could be susceptible. I remember first meeting Peter. I lived up on the west side of Brockton. He and another gentleman happened to be walking through our ward as he was running for
city council.
And he happened to walk in my, I'm like, who is this guy? Big strapping lad walks in my yard. Hey, just want to talk to you. Very approachable, nice guy. You would never have known that he was battling a demon, that he was trying to conquer this.
Yeah, no, I mean, and that's why, you know, I give so much credit to the Marciano family,
yes,
about coming out on this, because, you know, part and parcel of the problem is everywhere is the stigma of somebody who's using these terrible, insidious drugs. And to be able to get out there in front to say, you know what, yes, our family had a problem, and for Stephen to come out there and to continue to talk, no matter where it is, I'm not sure of any place he said that he wouldn't go talk to. He goes and talks to kids, he talks to families, he talks to people out there who I think are feeling, you know, many times they feel helpless, and this is a huge problem, and that just goes to show you that the problem of heroin and opiates doesn't have a zip code, it doesn't have where somebody's going, if you're rich or if you're poor. This problem is everywhere, and it can cross anywhere and tear at other people.
How did the conversation start with the Marciano family and the Evitable family? How did the conversation start where you asked them to come and tell the story of their lost loved one, their sibling?
I think it's like everything. It's a slow road. And I know that, you know, like Kevin Abitable spoke a number of times every year in October, you know, we have dedications to people who have lost from the heroin epidemic.
Yep.
And he has spoken there about his two brothers who passed
away. James and Patrick, right?
Yeah, who passed away from this terrible disease. And I think people, at some point, they want to get out there. And they figure out that we need to get the word out there. We need to help other people. We need to educate our kids at a younger age. We need to make sure that we get dealers off the street, but we get help and resources and bring everybody together, whether they be faith-based, family, legislative, judicial, law enforcement. Everybody has a little piece of the puzzle, and I think that's what we do in our task force with myself and the sheriff. We bring in all these different pieces and talk about it, and how can we develop best practices that not just using here in our county, but something that we can use and make sure that we can help as many people as we can. Right now in our county, we have three different drug courts. We have, you know, Plymouth County outreach, whereby the day after an overdose, a police officer and a social worker will show up at somebody's home and give them information. We have the old East Bridgewater Hope, which is now Plymouth County Hope, which are drop-in centers, which is picking up all across the county. And I think even more importantly is that we have 27 communities here in Plymouth County, and all of our communities All the police departments are sharing information for our database so that we can continue to work together and find out in real time where are these terrible things happening and where do we need to put our resources and how can we help more.
How did you go away from doing the in-studio sit-down? I know you've done it down at PAC TV. They got a fantastic facility down there in the industrial park. I've had Donna and the folks in from time to time. Actually, I think they do because I think they have an upcoming telethon.
They do.
They do. Right. They got the big fundraiser that they do for on a regular.
The Rotary.
Thank you very much. I'm stammering here trying to spit out the name, but you are right. And we have them in to kind of talk about it and kind of boost it because it's on PBS level.
It really is.
I've sat and watched it and I'm like, oh my God. This is fantastic.
I've been a guest auctioneer for 15 years, and it's really incredible the amount of work they put into that.
I don't know how the heck you Rob Hakala, I think we have the county treasurer.
Yep, Senate president used to do it, the sheriff. Everybody guest auctioneers down there, and it's a great cause, once again, for the town of Plymouth and for the Rotary down in Plymouth. And, Steve Trifoletti down there, the moderator, who's the moderator for the Rotary Club auction, does a great job.
Well, so what I was saying is that you do a regular show, and there's a difference between sitting down, gathering your information, and doing a one-on-one, whether it's a half an hour, 40 minutes. But this is different. You actually had to piece this together, tell a story via the different interviews, and even have Aaron Tebow, who is the one who produced and directed this particular documentary. He did a fantastic job. But he was even, up on stage as Steve is talking to this group of individuals about his brother and what his brother endured.
Right. No, it's like anything. It's something that, we felt was important, and with Sports Smart to get the word out regarding the kids in the schools, we felt we had to have some sort of a presentation. So bringing people together and talking, whether it be the Avitables or the Marcianos, Dr. Muse, all the people, and all the people in this documentary, I think, really were people who were committed to this issue and to this problem. And it was easy to get it done, quite honestly. I mean, and Aaron does a great job putting it together, making those people look great. Anyways, he made me look good, which is not easy. And he did a tremendous job with that. And it's a very professional piece, and it's something that we put out there, and it's on our website at the Plymouth DA's office and our Plymouth Drug Abuse Task Force website. Something that we throw out there, and anybody can take it. Anybody can use it, and we need to continue that we make sure we get the word out.
What a fantastic question, Steve, in that piece that we played. Who says that when they grow up they want to be a drug addict?
Right.
Nobody.
Right.
Nobody. But we're seeing this happen to individuals where they're getting hooked on opioids, somehow get involved with heroin, and then as though it's not tough enough on your department to try to combat that, you have fentanyl, carfentanil, and who knows what is down the road that's going to be even harder and stronger than those two other that I just mentioned.
Yeah, the challenges are great. I mean, the fentanyl wasn't even, in and of itself, it wasn't even a crime until about a year ago. It made a law saying that it was a crime to distribute or possess it. Now we have carfentanil, which is an elephant tranquilizer, which is 100 times stronger than fentanyl, which is 100 times stronger than heroin. And the heroin on the street nowadays is so pure, 90, 95% pure. Back when I was a young prosecutor in the 80s, the heroin on the street was probably 18, 20% pure. The vast majority of it was cut. It was inositol. It was something substitute that could make more from less. Nowadays, it's incredibly pure stuff. And what Sports Smart is about is because the kids that get hurt playing sports, what we try to talk to them about is you get an injury, you don't necessarily need, doctors aren't going to give you all Percocets anymore. Lots of the pain and the problems that you have, or some of the injuries you have, you can deal with Aleve, with Motrin. Yep. You don't need to have those sort of drugs. I think we've made great strides with the physician monitoring program. They're no longer handing out large groups of pills to individuals. That's a good thing. The bad thing is that the kids that are getting hooked on the prescription medication, when they can't get enough of it, the next step is going to heroin. And so therefore, once you get onto heroin, the next step is fentanyl and carfentanil. In Plymouth County, of the first 10 hits of carfentanil in Commonwealth of Massachusetts, 6 of them were in Plymouth County. Mm. We had a couple in Brockton, and that stuff is treated as a hazmat situation. The police officers, the dogs, nobody can touch it.
They tell you in the purest form, right?
You can absorb it through your skin and you can overdose. So it's actual poison that's out there for people.
Goodness.
And so therefore we find ourselves in a situation where people are using these drugs. I don't think half the time they even know what they're getting. and they don't know what they're getting into. But the problem that we see with the opiate stuff is that people's body chemistry is changing, and they can't control themselves. They're getting these drugs, and they need to use them.
Okay, and we're speaking with Plymouth County District Attorney Tim Cruz. He's our guest. We're talking a little bit about the cable series that they have been doing. He's been doing, his office has been doing, in conjunction with the Plymouth County Sheriff's Department's office, and the great work that they're doing. How do you feel as far as the state has been doing under this administration, taking great care to tackle this issue and at least put the Commonwealth somewhat on the forefront of, you know, being able to tackle addiction and help those in need?
I think the Governor Baker's administration has done a really fine job of trying to work with this. It's a house fire. And sometimes trying to put out a house fire with the kitchen fire extinguisher is not going to work. You need to have the full hoses, all right, the fire departments there. So I think, you know, what he's trying to do is trying to get more beds. It's always a problem with beds. There's never enough room. If somebody goes to court, they get Section 35, is when they send somebody to a bed that may be available, either through the system or not in the system. Very difficult to find those things. He's made it possible for there to be more beds. But we need to get more treatment. And once again, like I said, we need to get a bigger picture of things. It's got to be everybody on board with this. And there's got to be an educational background for them to get in front of the kids so they understand that the drugs, whether it be marijuana or cocaine or heroin, is just as bad for you as cigarettes are. Lots of kids will stay away from cigarettes because they've learned in their classes at school that nicotine's bad. And some of them think that some of the other things are not so bad.
You know, you and I had a conversation, or I was privy to a conversation about the legalization of marijuana. At that time, about 10 years ago, the conversation was, you know, it's just a matter of time before it's legalized. And we're at that juncture at this point in time. Does marijuana, the legalization of marijuana, does this somehow play a role in what we're dealing with opioids and heroin, or no?
You know, I think that you can get doctors on both sides to say that it is a gateway drug, that's not a gateway drug. I was recently at a forum where a doctor was talking about whether it's a gateway drug or not. By using marijuana, you open up sensory perceptors in your body, which makes you more amenable to use drugs.
Right.
So I think that, you know, that situation there is going to make us in a position where kids are potentially going to use marijuana, and that can certainly lead to other things. I'm hopeful that, you know, by teaching kids how to be careful, how to take care of their bodies. Other doctors I've talked to say, listen, kids, you know, it's going to be legal in July if you're over the age of 21. But that this woman still professes, but please don't smoke it until you're about 24, 25, because your brain is still developing.
Right.
And this is not good for your brain. So if you're going to smoke it, wait till you're 25, 26. Please don't smoke it when you're 17, 18, 19. And that's part of the problems, I think, maybe coming our way with the home grows and things such as that that are coming through that question that was allowed.
Where do you stand in regards to the break in the cycle show? Do you have any more in the works? Is there any coming down the pipe that the folks who may subscribe to a sharing service like Telview Connect are able to download it and share it with their audiences?
Well, yeah, we definitely have more in the works because it's an ongoing problem. It's an ongoing situation. Myself and some people from my office are going to be speaking shortly regarding drug-endangered kids. And that what we see with that is that, you know, a lot of people who are using opiates, our fatal opiate overdoses here in our county, the average age is between 20 and 29. Mm. And that's child-rearing years. You know, people have children. A lot of those parents, unfortunately, are passing away due to this disease, or they're unable to take care of their kids, meaning that these young kids have a drug problem. They don't use drugs, but they have a drug problem because their parents are using drugs, and therefore they're ending up either with a legal guardian or with a grandparent. And the grandparents really aren't equipped, as I get older, you know, to taking care of your grandkids. We're dealing with an entire issue of children now who, in my opinion, we're creating a new cycle. Drug-endangered kids. We have a cycle of child abuse. We have a cycle of domestic violence. Yep. This is the new cycle coming up. We've got to get in front of this because it just is a real bad road that we're on.
Depending on who you ask, there are many of those out there who have their feelings in regards to the current administration serving down in D.C. Do you feel that the Trump administration is doing enough to address this issue and be able to help with funding for states like Massachusetts and those in the New England region?
Well, they are providing grants through drug-free community grants, which we've actually been able to help a lot of different communities here in our county get it. You know, Middleborough, Carver, and Plymouth on one direction, and we have East Bridgewater, Brockton, Rockland, Whitman on the other side, and I know other communities are applying for drug-free community grants. We just got, my office just got a Project Safe Neighborhood grant, which is contingent upon it's guns and drug violence, because that's from the prosecutorial end of it. It's something that's, I think, really important. They only made 4 selections for the entire country, and we got one of those, a $450,000 grant, which is going to provide us resources, an additional prosecutor, some overtime for the state police and the local police that we're dealing with this. So I think that they're going in that direction and trying to come at it with, you know, from the drug-free community grants, helping the communities, from the prosecutorial end of it, trying to help us also. But I think there's more that needs to be done.
Any thoughts of doing another documentary like you did, but not so much in the sports end of things, but maybe, I don't know, I'm sure there are other areas that you could tackle with such a video.
Yeah, no, I think we're always open to ideas, and we're always trying to figure out, you know, what we can do to try to get the word out and put those infomercials, for lack of a better word, on cable or on our office website. Anybody that wants the sports cycle stuff or the breaking the cycle stuff can get it on our website, and we're happy to turn it over to anybody that wants it and watch it, and hopefully some people can learn a few things from it, and we'll be creating more, and I'm hopeful that we're going to be able to do some real interesting subjects.
As far as I know, again, PAC TV serving 4 communities, which would be Pembroke, Duxbury, Kingston, and Plymouth. And I know Whitman and Hanson are airing it. And I wouldn't doubt that it's being aired in Brockton, because
I think it is.
The individual who produced it works for Brockton Community Access. So at least that's 7 communities that we know that it is airing. Anything that I haven't mentioned or touched upon in regards to this subject that do you feel is important to getting the word out about?
I just think that people need to understand that we have to, as a community, get together to work from a much bigger perspective than just criminal justice.
Yep.
You know, in the criminal justice world, we deal, unfortunately, we're many times with the depository of lots of problems. You know, mental health issues, they end up in the criminal justice system. Drug issues end up in the criminal justice system. If we don't get in front of this, a lot of the pieces of the puzzle aren't going to be working. So we need to make sure that we continue to work together and cooperate and communicate, and I think that that's what we're trying to do.
And I want to make sure I say thank you to Beth Stone. She worked really hard behind the scenes to work your schedule, be able to get you in here. I think you're a Marshfield guy, or you're somebody who lives in the area. So actually, it's funny because you're in the intro when Joe Rossi's throwing me under the bus for not being a Marshfield guy. So you're in the intro. Are you still playing hockey?
I am.
You still South Coast hockey?
I'm still playing with South Coast. A great group of guys on Sunday nights.
And just so you know, we have that on the Whitman Hanson cable access as well. I think it's produced. I think Marshfield produces it, don't they? I think they do.
I'm not sure who produces it, but they do a tremendous job with it.
Yeah, they do. Well, I want to thank you again so much for coming in.
Thanks, Kevin.
And I definitely would like to have you back in maybe a month or two. To talk about what's going on, because the other thing that's happening, a lot of communities are trying to get up to code, whether they want to sell marijuana, recreational marijuana, that is, whether they want to be allowed to be grown, or just put a moratorium on it. So I definitely would like to get your take on it.
Sure.
All right. We are going to step aside, and when we come back, the second hour of Monday Night Talk. Don't go anywhere.
South Shore's breaking news, weather, and traffic station.
95.9 WATD FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com. Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Don't just listen, say something. Call 781-837-4900. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
All right, we're back for round number two of Monday Night Talk. That was a fantastic conversation with the Plymouth County District Attorney, Tim Cruz, talking a little bit about the Sports Smart video that you heard a little bit of it here. And again, we'll put the podcast up in the next couple of days so you'll be able to hear that entire conversation. Later on this hour, Billy Boyle from the Pembroke Chamber of Commerce, as well as Peter Brown from the Plymouth Area Chamber of Commerce, get a little bit of a take of them taking the helm. But right now, we're going to speak with the Communications Director for the Citizens for Limited Taxation, Mr. Chip Faulkner. Chip, how are you, my friend?
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, well, listen, this whole half hour is devoted to you giving us the lowdown on some stuff that, you know, that we need to keep an eye on as taxpayers and let our legislative leaders know how we feel in regards to some of these topics. Do you agree?
Oh, absolutely.
I don't know where to start this. It's almost like your favorite smorgasbord, all the favorite foods, and you don't know where to start. So I'm just going to probably go for your wheelhouse.
All right, sure. In January, I was in the State House, and I testified at two different hearings they had. One was on the tolls on the highways. Now, you might have remembered this from last fall.
Yep.
And around the middle of October, then Senator McGee from Lynn, he's now the mayor, he proposed that tolls be added, not increased, but added to various highways around 128, Route 2, among others, because he wanted more money for the state. And I went in and testified against this for two or three reasons. Number one, we already have some roads that you need to pay tolls. Number two, if you drive a car in Massachusetts or own an automobile, you're already paying several charges. For example, when you buy the car, you have to pay a sales tax. Mm-hmm. So if your car is more than $20,000, you're paying a sales tax of over $1,000. Plus, you have to registration for the car. There's a fee there. There's the auto excise tax, which is $25 per thousand. There's the inspection fee you have to pay. And then the gas tax, which they just increased 3 cents a gallon a few years ago. So when you add all these up, depending on the value of your car, you're paying anywhere from several $100 to several thousand already to the state, and now they want to sock you with more tolls.
Well, let's not forget, I believe it was back in, 2013, where the legislation did pass that law where they were going to be indexing the gas tax.
Yeah.
And then you had the following year, was it not, the ballot question. I call it the David versus Goliath ballot question, where residents stopped that indexing in its tracks because the argument was, why should this tax be implemented without faces and people voting for it, where it just rings up.
Absolutely. Well, you know, on that ballot question, which was on the ballot in 2014,
yep.
The people opposed to the gas tax increase, they wisely let the 3% recent increase stay. However, the ominous part of that whole thing was the legislature had proposed that any gas tax increase would be tied to inflation. So if inflation were 5% or 10% or whatever it was, you would get an automatic increase in the gas tax, which means that the state legislature would never have to vote for this tax increase. And that's why they did it. And when it was on the ballot, and you were absolutely right when you said David versus Goliath,
yep.
because the people opposed to this gas tax chicanery were outspent 33-1.
Sure.
It was something like $3 million to about $80,000, and they still won. They beat them despite being outspent by that huge margin. And what bothered me and irritated me the most in that whole campaign was AAA of Massachusetts came out in favor of the gas tax increase. Now, what the hell is AAA doing getting involved in a ballot question, especially when they're headquartered in Rhode Island?
Right. Yeah, well, you know, isn't that what we said? I mean, when you look back at the last set of ballot questions we had to endure when we had charter, when there was the push for charter schools, didn't you have an entity outside of the state pushing to, you know, to I want to say it was an organization in New York State that was pushing for charter schools to be implemented here in Massachusetts?
Yep. Yeah, so, I mean, there was a ton of money poured into that campaign on both sides.
So this whole idea about putting the tolls in, how much does this represent? I believe it was whispered, it was talked about under the Deval Patrick administration about doing open road tolling. Is it a similar situation? Is that what's being whispered?
You may be talking about when they wanted to tax you per mile that you travel.
Yep.
And you know, it's, you know, that was the other. There were two bills I testified on. One was the one we just talked about, mm-hmm. the tolls on the highways. The other was a proposal to tax people per mile. So if you traveled 8,000 miles a year compared to 15,000, you'd be, I mean, talk about control over your life. That is Big Brother personified. And I told that to the committee. I said, this is like 1984, the Orwellian novel. You know, this is crazy. You know, the other thing I pointed out was that and the people that defeated the gas tax used these statistics to very well. It was that on the highways, we spend triple the national average in maintenance costs. We spend triple the national average on per state-controlled mile. On administration, we spend seven times as much. It's something like $75,000 per state-controlled mile compared to a national average of around $10,000 or $11,000. And I threw these statistics out to the committee. There were about 10 of them there. Of course, there's 20 on the committee, but only 10 showed up. But I put this up and I said, could someone want to explain why this happens? There must be a tremendous amount of money you could save just by coming somewhere near the national average. And you know, all I got from that committee was a bunch of blank stares, and nobody asked a question. They could care less.
Let me, you know, well, where do you think folks are going to, elected officials, the SJC is going to stand in regards to slashing the sales tax?
Well, I think that's going to be on the ballot. But it's the grad tax that is probably the one that everyone's kind of waiting on eggshells for.
If you wouldn't mind, explain what that is, so folks who may be tuning in now, so they know what it is.
Sure, the graduated income tax is when it's graduated in that. The more money you make, the higher the rate is.
Right.
For example, let's say you're making 20 grand and you're paying 5% in state income tax. Well, let's say you make 30, then the rate would jump to 6%. If you're making 40, it would jump to 7, and so on. And that's the graduated income tax is actually in effect in 38 states. Fortunately, we're one of about a dozen that has a flat rate. So if you make $1 million, you pay 5%. If you make $20,000, you pay 5%. To me, that's fair. And there's a group that wants to tax people who make more than $1 million. They want to jump that income tax rate from 5% to 9%. So you're paying almost double if you make more than $1 million. And that's being challenged in court. And the people opposed to this question argued a case before the Supreme Judicial Court about a week or two ago. And they said this should not be on the ballot. It's got unrelated matters on it. And it's a whole bunch of legalese, which, you know, I don't understand. But apparently the SJC is going to come out in June with a ruling on whether or not this can go forward. And if it does, it will be on the ballot in November. Now, the history behind this is the grad tax has been on the ballot five times since 1962. 62, 68, 72, 76, and the last time was 1994, been decisively defeated every single time. The last time by a 70-30 margin. So we're hoping we get the same results if it is on the ballot this November.
Now, the grad tax, is this the same thing as the millionaire's tax?
Yes.
Okay, I just want to make sure that...
The only thing, the difference is, they, in the what they did in 1994 was this. They put, you know, because it's a constitutional amendment, they had to take two votes of the legislature in two consecutive sessions to get it on the ballot. Plus getting signatures and so on. But the point is that the previous attempts, all they did was they put something on the ballot to make the tax graduated. What they did in 94 was they actually had one question which simply allowed them to set different rates for income. The other question actually set the rates. And to give you an idea of what they wanted, in 94... your property, your income tax bill would have gone from 5% to 8.8% if you made more than $50,000. Almost double if you made 50 grand. Now, that was their proposal back then. And and you know, and we all know, that once they go after the millionaires, they'll go after the rest of us.
Right.
And, you know... it'll be half a million, then 100,000, then 50,000. Because once the loot starts pouring in, they're going to attack us all.
I want to digress back to the sales tax, knowing that you know it was not too long. It was a number of years ago when the voters reversed the income tax from what was it like 5.3,
and yeah, it was supposed to. Well, it was up. Bigger than that, it was like 5.9
for 5.9 or 5.95, and then it took a while. It was supposed to be an action. It was supposed to be immediate, but it seemed as though it something was built in by the legislature where they ignored it.
Well, what they did was this: when it passed on the ballot in 2000,
yep,
by an almost 60-40 margin, I might add, which was about the same margin for Prop 2.5 in 1980. But we allowed a three-step process. So it was 5.95%, and then the next year went down to 5.7 or 5.5. Then it went down to 5.3,
and the
following year would have been down to 5%.
Yeah.
What the legislature did in the summer of 2002 was they froze the downward spiral to 2.3. So that's we had ever since. And then Tom Finneran, the House Speaker, came up with some convoluted formula saying, all right, we'll get down to 5%, but the economy's got to be here and the
right.
Economic growth has got to be there, and you only get it if you're a redhead over 6 feet tall. You know, it was very, very...
The ginger tax.
Yeah. And it's down. It's now down to 5.1%. But it's still got another, which sounds, well, that's great. It's, you know, it's just slightly above 5%. But keep in mind, this thing was mandated in 2000, almost 20 years ago.
Yep.
The voters mandated it had to be down to 5% in 2 or 3 years. And we're still playing around with it.
Again, we're speaking with Chip Faulkner. He is with Citizens for Limited Taxation. And I think my producer, Ben Rabinowitz, he's pouting in the other room because he's a ginger himself. So that means if such a tax is implemented...
Not only am I a ginger, but I am a ginger over 6 feet. So does that mean I have to pay extra taxes on top of this?
Wow.
I mean, the cards are stacked against us as it is.
Wow.
I wanted to ask that because I knew the slow actions that the legislature took for the income tax to roll it back wasn't immediate, and I'm curious if we're going to see something similar with the legislature, if in fact this is something that is enacted by the voters of Massachusetts to roll it back from 6.25% to 5.
Well, yes and no. Anything, this is an initiative. It's not a constitutional amendment. So
right.
Let's say the voters approve it and it goes from 6.25 to 5. Unfortunately, it's a law, just like any other law on the books. And they could, theoretically, a month after the question passes, they could vote just to keep it at 6.25. And the problem is, since half of them never have any opponents, they could possibly get away with this. Now, I think the key here is how much it passes by. For example, in 1980, with Prop 2.5, it passed almost 60-40, which astonished the opponents. They thought they were going to beat us. And because it passed so overwhelmingly, the legislature didn't dare touch it. And plus, it was, believe it or not, the relentless lobbying of the late Barbara Anderson, which preserved Prop 2.5. Because we had an office in Boston then, and I remember going up with memos about once or twice a week to the legislature, in effect saying, leave Prop 2.5 alone. It was voted in by the people, and we were able to keep it intact. I mean, they've tinkered around the edges, but by and large, the law that passed in 1980 is still intact, much to the relief of people who are paying property taxes in the state.
So I have to ask you, Chip, then, do you feel that it's time for a modification of that law, or do you feel that Prop 2.5 is doing its job?
No, 2.5 has worked very well, because everyone says, well, how can you live with just 2.5? What if inflation is 4%? Well, the point is this, that you for a town budget, the property tax levy is, depending on the town, anywhere from 20% to about 70% of your total budget. So the budget can include fees, it includes state aid, a lot of state aid people get in these cities and towns, and they have the option of the override, and that was the safety valve, so that if they could not live under the 2.5 limits, then the selectmen could vote to put it on the ballot, and the voters would then decide whether or not the town should be allowed to spend an extra, you know, $100,000 or $500,000 or whatever the amount is. Democracy in action.
This gives me an opportunity now to kind of roll right into the governor putting out his house budget for fiscal 2019, close to $41 billion, looking to target the drug issue, housing, the homelessness issue. Have you had a chance to peruse the budget? And what do you think of it?
Well, usually what we do is every time they come out with a budget, whether it's the House budget, the Senate, or the governor's, we go to what is called the outside sections of the budget. And that could be anywhere from, 50 or 60 to 200 outside sections. And that's where sometimes you have dangers that lurk, like tax increases or enormous fees on something. And I've looked through these budgets in the last year or so, and they've actually been pretty good in terms of not having any hidden surprises. But what is kind of disappointing is that they never level. They're always pretty big increases. And I remember one year, this had to be when Weld was first elected in 1990. The following year, they had a budget that was almost level, almost no increase because of the overspending. And that's the problem with the state legislature. When the good times roll in and they take in extra revenue, they spend like no tomorrow. And, instead of saving something or giving us a break on some tax. And then when the bad times come in, they realize they've overspent, they don't get the revenues coming in, and then instead of saying, well, we got to cut somewhere, they instead say, well, I guess we got to get more revenue somewhere, so we'll get it from some poor guy who's paying the tax bills in the state.
So then I would ask you, is what's your anticipation for House 2 and House 3? Of course, that's the Massachusetts House will put forth their budget, followed by the Senate.
Yeah, and the Senate probably will have the highest amount, because the Senate tends to be more liberal and full of big spenders than the House. And I expect to see, budgets that are even higher than the governor's. But think about this. It's over $40 billion.
Right.
Believe it or not, I can still, maybe I'm aging myself, but I can remember in the mid-'80s when Michael Dukakis was governor, they had a budget of $6 billion. And I remember the following year it jumped to $7 billion. Mm. And then the year after that, $8 billion. And they seem small amounts compared to the $40 billion we're talking about now. But when you go from $6 to $7 billion, you're going, almost a 14 to 15% increase in the budget. and the following year almost the same increase. And that sets the stage for implementing programs that are never, ever canceled, no matter how bad they are. I remember one time Roy Switzler, who was a state rep from Wellesley, get up in the podium in the State House, and he railed against still having a Spanish-American War Veterans Commission. And he pointed out that the youngest member of the commission would have to be something like 103 years old to, you know, to still have a commission. And he was using that symbolically, but there's a lot of other stuff buried in those budgets that should never be there or be eliminated.
But do you think that if this could be a quieter year? This is an election year, you know, and this is the, you know, the tail end for, you know, for senators and representatives. You know, this is the tail end of their legislative session. Do you feel that anybody would be brave enough to want to put forth new taxes or new initiatives, knowing that at the start of last year we saw raises for, you know, for many representatives and senators, and if you got a stipend for being a chair, you know, that increased too.
Yes, you have a stipend for being a block of wood, never mind a chair.
Right.
Yeah. you know, if the Massachusetts Republican Party has been ridiculed for years about their lack of activity against the opposition. And, you know, this $18 million pay hike they gave themselves in January is still resonating. They thought, okay, we'll pass this in January. We'll have almost 2 years to election. Everyone will forget about it. People have not forgotten about this. You still see letters to the editor mentioning the $18 million pay hike. And I think if the Republican Party had brains, they would field 75 or 100 candidates for the House and Senate and just hammer away at that $18 million pay hike. And I think they'd pick up 30 or 40 seats. And I really do believe that. The problem is, will this party seize this opportunity? And be a good question. Other states do it, and other parties do it in other states. You if you follow politics nationally, Oregon or Nebraska, or and both parties do it. If they get a hot issue, they just hammer away, and they pick up a ton of seats. And this could happen here if the Republican Party gets its act together.
Let me ask you this, though. Knowing that it's been a difficult, you know, midterm, it's been a difficult year and a half so far for the current administration down in Washington, D.C. Do you feel that Republicans are going to want to rock the boat, knowing that if any of them supported Donald Trump for president or any of his initiatives, that it might not bode well for them?
Well, I mean, one person who proudly carries the mantle of a Trump supporter is Representative Jeff Diehl.
Yep.
From Whitman.
Yep.
And for the listeners who may not be aware, there are three Republicans that are running in the Republican primary for the right to oppose Senator Elizabeth Warren. One of them is Beth Lindstrom,
yep,
who worked in the Weld administration in two or three different positions.
Yep.
The other is John Kingston, a businessman from Winchester. And the third is Representative Jeff Diehl, who's been in the legislature about 7 or 8 years. I've known him well, and he is very articulate. He's very conservative, and he was the Massachusetts chairman or co-chairman
co-chair
of the,
yep,
Trump people in Massachusetts, and he makes no bones about it. And I think the fact that he's being so upfront and honest about it bodes him well, because he's not going to crumble and apologize, and he's just going to push forward and say, here is my plan for the state, here's what I want to do. And you know, most people, or I shouldn't say most, but a lot of people think he should win the primary because Lindstrom and Kingston will split the moderate vote. But it's hard to say. I mean, you know, the primary is the day after Labor Day. It's
right.
Very early this year. But a lot of things can happen in the next few months. Who knows?
And oddly enough, is you mentioned Representative Jeff Diehl, who has been on the show. Beth Lindstrom has been on this program to announce her campaign. But Representative Diehl was one of the leading individuals pushing for that the repeal that gas tax.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, yeah. He was one of the big
ones. And let's not forget the 2024 Olympics, too.
Yes. Yes. He beat that back. And not only that, but the signature drives. People forget to put something on the ballot, an initiative, you have to get a ton of signatures the year before. And believe me, CLT used to do that all the time. I mean, I personally ran about 6 or 7 signature drives across the state where you have to get, 65,000 certified signatures, but you have to really get 100,000 because of all that's thrown out. And it's a lot of work, a lot of time, and a lot of effort. And Jeff Deal was right in the thick of that, getting signatures. And he should be commended for that.
Now, the last thing I want to leave you with, and again, we're speaking with Chip Faulkner. He is with the Citizens for Limited Taxation. He's been our guest for this part of the show. Coming up in a few moments, we'll hear from Billy Boyle and Peter Brown. But you and I also wanted to talk a little bit about, I want to give you an opportunity to at least kind of address the recent tax reform, the federal tax reform that was signed into law. What are you hearing about this, and what's your thoughts on it coming into tax season?
Well, it's great because, number one, a lot of businesses are giving bonuses, wage increases to their workers based on this tax reform. Mm-hmm. In fact, I had a speaker from the Americans for Tax Reform speak at a meeting of mine in January, and she brought a booklet. And this is only a week or two after it passed, showing 150 companies across the country who had benefited from this tax reform by benefiting workers in a variety of ways, bonuses, increases, time off, and so on. And not only that, but the cut in the capital gains has had a tremendous effect. Companies now that were overseas are bringing their money back to the United States. And it's hundreds of millions. In fact, I think it's trillions that could come back and the economy could boom, because it's been stagnant under Obama for the last 8 years. So this is a really great thing happening to the country. And I think Trump is lauding it. Of course he would, among other things. Mm-hmm. But I love it. Another thing he's done, and this goes right under the radar, he took the Federal Register, which is a compilation of 95,000 pages of regulations, and he's had bureaucrats go through them and cut the regulations by 32%, which is great because it frees up people's ability to make money, to work, and the money isn't going to government, it's going into your own pocket. And could I give an appeal to contribute to CLT?
Please do. You have 1 minute.
Okay. You can go to our website, www.cltg.org, and get on and go to PayPal, and our average membership fee is $30, and we appreciate anything you could send. Again, it's the website is cltg.org. Please contribute. It'll keep us going to fight for you, the taxpayer.
And we appreciate you coming on here and contributing to this radio show and to this station and sharing some of your thoughts and some of your views. While they're out there, I'm sure there are folks out there who aren't agreeing with your views. At least they get to at least hear, what people are thinking about and know that there's at least somebody trying to represent them if this is, what they believe in.
Great. Yeah.
So we will talk again real soon, maybe right around the time that the House 2 budget comes out.
Sure, I'd love to come on.
All right, there
Thanks
he is.
Thanks for having me on.
You got it, sir. Chip Faulkner, Citizens for Limited Taxation, being our guest in the chatting up. We touched a bunch of stuff here. Tolls, talked a little bit about the graduated tax, maybe possibly a ballot question for reducing the sales tax, to even talking about the budgets. So good stuff. We're going to step aside. And when we come back, we'll have the final segment of Monday Night Talk right here on 95.9 WATD.
This is Monday Night Talk. with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
McGuigan's Pub in downtown Whitman is a great place to unwind any night of the week. Stop in for Singo on Monday night. There's the always popular Irish Sessions every Tuesday night, half-price pizza every Wednesday night, and Friday and Saturday nights feature the best in live entertainment. Catch your favorite game on McGuigan's 8 big flat screens and enjoy a pint at their beautiful 54-foot mahogany bar. Whether you're a regular or coming in for the first time, you're always a friend of McGuigan's Pub, 546 Washington Street, Whitman Center.
Ever see a windshield crack grow smaller? Not ever. I'm Peter Brown of Tiny & Sons Glass in Pembroke. Windshield cracks grow like a bad toothache. The reason is, you come out of your warm house into cold air. You reach for that cold door handle, your windshield is cold. You turn on a defroster, your windshield is hot. Windshield expands. Not much, just enough to pull that crack along. Advice, check your windshield now. Little dings, starburst, bullseyes. We'll fix them before they grow awful. Just call 1-888-64-TINIES. And thank you.
Find Monday Night Talk on Facebook and share your opinions. Go to 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
Welcome back to the final segment of Monday Night Talk. And I have to say, I mentioned this earlier, I'll mention it again. It's really cool that previously I thought it was cool when I had, and using the same namesake, when I had the brother Boyles in, one running for re-election for selectman, one running for school committee. Well, running is kind of a strong word because I don't know if there was even anybody running for the seat. But we have William Billy Boyle is here. So we have, it's kind of like a bookend type of a thing for Monday Night Talk. It's kind of a first, I think, in my book, so to speak. So Billy Boyle, who is a local business guy, a great softball player, married to another Boyle. I didn't realize that there were two Maureen Boyles until she took your name. Maureen,
that's right.
Of course.
Oh, yes.
PAC TV. As I believe she does the PCN News or PAC TV News.
She's the news director down there, yes.
Thank you very much. Billy, of course, is he's taking the helm of the Pembroke Chamber of Commerce. So he is here. Bill, welcome to Monday Night Talk, sir.
Kevin, thanks for having me tonight.
I think I should say welcome back. Because haven't you been on before?
I believe so. I've been on, you know, with you, and obviously big fan of WATD, so I've been on some of the other shows as well, and it's always a great time, and I love having you guys have me back. So
yeah, we haven't had you on to talk about your comedy thing. You also do comedy too, don't you?
I do, and I'm actually funny enough now people pay me to do it. It's great.
Of course. His Pembroke counterpart, a gentleman who is a fantastic, his organization is one of our proud sponsors here on Monday Night Talk. Peter also has co-hosted on here.
Yes.
And there are some who wonder out loud if Peter is cloned, because Peter does so many things, just like Billy.
Yeah.
Wears so many hats. He's everywhere. Not only is he somebody, he's a board member for the Talking Information Center. Not only is he business owner, we know that he is a member of said the Pembroke Chamber of Commerce.
Yep.
He's actually the one who got the hook in my mouth to play for the Chamber softball, the annual Chamber softball. And I believe we're, with me being on the team, not that I'm tooting my horn, we're 3-0 against
the
Cops.
Yeah, you're a great backstop back there, bro.
Yeah,
you do a great
job. It's because I'm wide enough. So the ball kind of, they just say, aim for the guy's chest, and it just bounces right off.
They all aim for you when they're going for home plate.
That's true.
Yeah.
That is very true, especially the fire chief. We'll talk about that another time.
Yes, sir.
Peter is taking over the helm. As I believe you're going to be the president for the Plymouth Area Chamber of Commerce.
Yep.
So what we're here to talk about this evening is to talk about these two respective gentlemen. Not only their how much stuff they do in the community, and I didn't mention, I think Billy was talking before during the break, he had mentioned he's also a member of other organizations. Aren't you part of the Rotary too?
Yes, so the Pembroke Hanover Norwell Club. I was president for 2015, 2016, and you know, I've been with them since 2012, so it's a great group. We raise a lot of money for the community, and I've been very proud to be a part of that group.
Let me ask you both respectively, what drives you to want to be on these, to be part of these particular organizations? What is it, what motivates you to want to be a community-oriented person to give back to those who you live amongst?
Well, I can certainly speak to, you know, coming from a lineage of great men, and I know, you know, Peter's the same way. You know, you have people like my dad, you know, my uncle, my grandfather that always gave back to their community. And again, it's, you know, it's about building the relationships with the people around you, being fortunate enough to be in the position that you are, that you have the time to give back and just help others that need it.
And I might add, is while we're talking about the service that they give, during, you know, I'm witness to it when we're done or at the before the game, before the first pitch is thrown, checks being given. I know Billy has been one of those who has, you know, showcased a check that, you know, he was able to get folks to donate, whether it was a donations or something via the organization, his insurance company that he had. One way or the other, giving money back. Peter, same way, doing a lot of things. What is it with you, Peter, that makes you want to devote so much of your time to help others here in the community?
It's like Billy said, it's our parents. I mean, it was instilled in us right from when we were born. I mean, we started doing a lot of charitable events. I remember when I was 5, 6 years old for Cardinal Cushing in Braintree.
Right.
And it went from there, and we've always been in somewhere, doing something for someone else since we've known it. And it's how we were raised.
And again, just so folks know, you know, the idea of Monday Night Talk, the program itself, it's a magazine show, but the idea is just to kind of showcase what's going on here on the South Shore, whether it's an issue, whether it's a problem, whether it's political races or folks who are out there doing stuff or events that are up and coming. So this is in that vein, talking with a couple of guys who give back to the community. Not to say that there are not other people who are doing it, but it's just so much. It's just ironic that I had a chance to speak with Peter, and we kind of generated the idea. And again, big fan of Billy, especially when he's batting fourth for our softball team and hitting him over the fence, or just knowing that these guys are out there doing this kind of stuff to help others. Because you're talking to somebody who does the news, you know, and you look back and you see the horrific events that happened, you know, last week when two kids were murdered, and you go, oh my God, you hear so much negativity in the news. I think the idea of at least doing a segment like this, we can kind of get to know these two gentlemen and some of the work that they do, and kind of also get an idea as to where their heads are at, taking the helm of these respective organizations. We'll go back to you, Peter. What made you decide to want to elevate yourself from being a membership status or an officer status to being somebody who is kind of, you know, you're going to kind of create a, you're going to put your vision forth, so to speak, to kind of help the organization move forward.
Yeah, and it's I'm in a lot of organizations where, you know, I volunteer for a lot of stuff, and I had an opportunity. Dennis Hanks brought me on board about 5 years ago to be a board member of the Plymouth Chamber. And as I rotated through the seats, I became the membership chair, and then I went on to the executive board, and I found a place where I could make a difference. So now, being the chair, I can see things, I can influence some things, I can get people more involved that weren't involved before to help the community better. So,
okay. Mm. What about you, Bill? What was it that made you go from membership to saying, you know, I kind of got a vision, and you know, I'm gonna take the helm. I'm gonna go from being, whether it's an officer or being somebody who's part of the membership, to being the one who's leading the membership for the foreseeable future?
Well, it's as Peter's saying, when your parents instill something in you, excuse me, when you see an opportunity, you know, knowing that you have to seize that. And having seen Dave Shea do an amazing job for 8 years.
Great guy.
He's a wonderful guy. He was, you know, tired, though. 8 years is a long run to be at the helm, to be taking charge, you know, day in and day out. And he was ready to pass the torch. And looking around, I said, well, I'm certainly in a position that I'm able to pick it up and run with it. So I'm just, again, fortunate enough that I was in that position to say, yes, I want to do this, and then had the support of the board to say, yeah, you know what, take it and run with it. So,
I mean, I'm a guy of analogies, so I'm going to use an analogy here. And that is, so did Dave do the, you know, we've been watching what's been happening with the New England Patriots over the past week, and almost losing both of their coordinators. Defensive coordinator Matt Patricia takes off at Detroit. Josh McDaniels almost leaving, but then last minute the checkbook swooshes in, and the hoodie Bill Belichick says to Josh, "Hey, I'm gonna take you under my wing, and I'm gonna show you the secret sauce, the recipe to my secret sauce." Have you had that? Did Dave kind of take you under? Was there some kind of predetermined discussion that, or is he still going to just kind of be there to kind of help you for a smooth transition?
Well, yeah, he's still a member of our board of directors, right. So he's still going to be involved. Just obviously not to the extent that he's been. Again, he's done so much that we owe it to him to really pick up the slack and just work together as a board. We've got a wonderful board. We've taken on some new members, Lisa Riley in particular, but just our support with Kyle Harney, Kelly Lee, obviously Peter. Again, you talk about somebody that does so much, Mike Damon. And since I'm kind of on the spot, if I've forgotten you, obviously you're still a very valued person of the board.
That comes with when you start naming off names.
Yeah, and then I'm going, oh no.
Yeah, somebody, you didn't
Steve Tomasi, and forget him.
Oh yeah, right.
Yeah, you know,
more big bats in the lineup for the Pembroke game.
Yeah, talk about Italian Alzheimer's, you forget everything but the garage. I don't want to make him mad.
Amen to that. I same question for you, Peter. In regards to, making that transition, did you have the conversation with the outgoing president, or has there been a mentorship going on, or is it just a matter of you have that good enough relationship with the outgoing president or president's past that you can lean on them if you have questions or have ideas?
Well, I'm going to segue what Billy said. It was Dave Shea, past 8 years.
Fantastic guy.
I mean, he took the chamber when it was really floundering, and he kept it going. And he was the one that got a lot more younger people involved in not that we needed it, but I mean, he got a lot more younger people involved in the board. And he mentored me he showed me that it does work if you push yourself. And I have Lauren Backen, the past chair, Tony Baldwin, I was vice president with last year. And we have a good core group of leadership in Plymouth that are going to be around to help me continue it.
What is the, for folks that don't know,
right,
what is the importance of your local chamber of commerce? It isn't just a bunch of folks who just get together to have some spirits, is it?
It's like Fred Flintstone when he goes to the chamber of commerce meeting. No.
No.
No, this is something that any business, anybody that starts a business or becomes involved in business or puts a business in town, the first thing you want to get involved in is the area chamber. And these are the connections that you can get, at especially if you're trying to cold call. These are open door connections that you get. And it's up to us as chambers, Billy, as far as Pembroke and Plymouth, is to introduce these people to other businesses so that they can get to know the area, get involved, and get involved the right way.
Would you say that's accurate, Bill, or is there anything you'd want to add to that?
Oh, I mean, 100% that's accurate. And you also have the other aspect, too, of being a business in whatever community you decide to set up shop. And the chamber also helps foster that relationship, that buy local mentality, that you're being introduced to the community. And a lot of times your kids are going to the same school, you waiting at Dunkies to get coffee together. It just makes sense that you want to foster those relationships with the people in your community, because they're the ones that are either going to be buying your product or going to your shop or your restaurant. So I mean, you want to be involved as much as possible to give yourself a chance for as much success.
Do people not realize, do the common folks, the moms and the dads out there, the folks in the community, sometimes not realize the importance of local business? That it isn't necessarily that the big box stores that do as much, that there is an importance to local business. Peter?
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, we'll take the Plymouth Chamber as an example. We have 33 nonprofits that are in our chamber. So a lot of these nonprofits, they deal with the community directly, the mom and pops and the kids in school, the school education process, mentorships for small businesses, scholarship programs, recruitment, internships. So the chamber is extremely important for the community now, specifically now that you have a lot of the big box stores coming in. And for us to compete with the big box stores, because they're always going to be there, you need a base that can help educate you that they can to compete.
Power in numbers.
Power in numbers.
Power in numbers. Again, for maybe there are new businesses that are popping up, not necessarily the brick and mortar businesses, but folks who may work from home. Somebody who offers services for those who are out there listening may be considering. What would you guys say in regards to getting involved with your local chamber?
Well, see, that's a perfect example because the Plymouth Chamber has over 770 businesses that are in our system. A lot of them, a good percentage of them, but I'd say probably about a third, are five employees or less. So if you do have an in-home business, or if you have a traveling business, or sales-type business, or a business that needs meeting area or something, that's where the chamber comes into play. You need introductions or anything in that nature, this is where the chamber comes into play.
What would you say, what's your vision moving forward? I'm sure you have ideas, whether it's as far as stimulating membership or being able to do something that has your particular chamber's stamp on it that folks will say, oh, the Pembroke Chamber was involved with that, Billy.
Right. So our big thing that we're rolling out this year is an ambassador program, and it's been something that's been talked about for a while, and it's now starting to get some legs underneath it. So that's one of those things where we get members that are already involved in the chamber to now be ambassadors to reach out to local businesses that, you know, may be members but aren't necessarily getting everything out of the chamber that they could, and vice versa with people that aren't members, you know, obviously bringing them into the chamber to show them, you know, these are all the benefits that you get as being a part of this community. And, you know, with that, it just helps, again, foster those businesses. The nice thing, too, with the Pembroke Chamber, one of our members, Ed Thorne, town administrator.
I was going to say, I know that name.
Yes. So town administrator from Pembroke, it gives us that nice into on what's going on at the town level and how we can work together for economic development, things like that. For those that are trying to start businesses, Ed actually gave us a nice template and outline of the steps that you need to go through in terms of, you know, getting specific licensing, meetings that you have to go to and attend to register. So again, by being a member of the chamber, if that's something that you're thinking about starting a business, you want to start with the people that have their foot in the door and have the experience to help guide you along and take you under their wing and bring you along the path.
Peter, we throw it back to you. Give same question.
Well, I know the person that's leading the ambassador program with Pembroke is Lisa Riley from Cape Cod 5, and she's one of our ambassadors also at the Plymouth Chamber. Now, the Plymouth Chamber
is sharing ambassadors.
Yeah. Well, we have a liaison with Plymouth and Pembroke have a a partnership.
The memorandum of understanding.
Exactly.
See, to get all fancy,
I'm glad I brought you. This is like, see, he's my mentor. But this is where it's at. I mean, it's just these type of things that the chamber gets involved in helps, a business, somebody want, like say if you wanted to go out and sell headphones and be kind of, you know, create a headphone business, that we can get you contacts that way to get to do that stuff.
I would ask you this, especially with you, Peter.
Yes, sir.
Knowing that right around the corner is a huge event for Plymouth. Now, again, I know it's Plymouth Area Chamber of Commerce. We're talking about the 400th anniversary.
Yes.
How does the chamber play a role in a significant event or historical type of thing like that? How does the chamber somehow assist with that or be a part of that?
It's a huge role, and the reason why it's a huge role is because the 400 and it has its own entity, and they're doing a great job raising funds for that 1 year of that celebration. But the chamber is involved with not only that 1 year of celebration, but what attention is going to bring to Plymouth and what's going to happen after the 400. And we want to attain enough recognition so that maybe we can get some more manufacturing, mixed-use housing, a lot of infrastructure that's got to be built because they're doing a lot of infrastructure updates for this 400. Sure. We want it to continue afterwards. So not only are we going to help build it up, participate, but we're also going to make sure that the money that's raised is going to stay with us afterwards.
Okay. Yeah. Not knowing how Pembroke would be part of the Plymouth 400, I would probably kind of, I don't want to assume anything, but I would also probably want to daisy chain it, the conversation to signature events. Now, I think every chamber has their set of signature events. What would Pembroke's, would you expand beyond what Pembroke's signature events are, or just enhance them?
Potentially looking at enhancing them. You know, as they say, if it's not broke, you know, don't fix it.
Right.
We have some great events that we've been doing now for several years, as well as our business after hours, the second Tuesday of every month. Mm-hmm. So one of the big events that we do have coming up March the 23rd is our legislative breakfast, where we have a lot of the local reps from the area that are up at the State House, you know, now bringing it down to our level to let us know how everything going on affects us here, and, you know, talking about infrastructure, economic development, and again, things that are going to affect our day-to-day lives today and tomorrow and moving into the future. So that's one of the big events that we do at the Pembroke Country Club. We always get a great draw there. And, you know, from there, obviously Pembroke Day, you know, big celebration, celebrating obviously the police and the fire, as well as the sheriff's department, where we bring in all the families from Pembroke, give them a free day to come and have fun with the bouncy houses, get fingerprinted by the sheriff's department, get to see the DPW and the fire trucks, and just allow obviously the police and fire to interact on a human level with everybody instead of just having to be there in their uniforms, and again, just building that community and humanizing them, making everybody realize that, again, these are your neighbors, these are your friends, and your kids go to school together.
That's very important, and I don't think people understand. They can't hear that enough, that we are, whether we walk in uniform or whether we have a shiny badge, whatever it is, the idea of being able to say, hey, listen, while I serve in this capacity, you know, that I, too, here am part of the community. I am your neighbor. And I'm here to help and assist, not just necessarily put out a fire or cut off the bad guy or whatever the case, or give you a ticket if you had to go, you happen to be going a little too fast in a particular zone. I would ask you the same question, Peter. Signature events or signature things that the Plymouth Area Chamber of Commerce has done or is doing. What's your take moving forward?
Our main event is the Waterfront Festival in August. So that's our main. We shut down Plymouth Center for a whole day. You know, crafts, arts, crafts, political events. There's a car show. It's a good event. We have the Bark in the Park that we do on Nelson in May. I think you've brought the little one with you a couple times.
Yep.
That's always good. We do an amazing amount of ribbon cuttings, after work, after hours networking events. We have the Women's Means Business Luncheons. We have the Women's Empowerment Panel that's coming up. So if you go to PlymouthChamber.com, there's a whole schedule of events. Every month there's at least one or two things going on to help you entice your business. Enhance your business.
Is it strictly just businesses? When you do events like this, is it strictly you're just looking for business owners to get involved and volunteer? Or in general, do you guys look for volunteers just to get involved to kind of help out when you're doing big events?
Always looking for volunteers. And one of the biggest things that I got to mention is that this is the first year that we've had a veterans chair. Jesse Brown from Hydra for Heroes has become our veterans.
Excellent.
Our veterans chair this year, and we have a lot of veterans initiatives that are coming up the next 5 years. We're also going to be doing doing a lot more marketing for the veterans. We're going to also our new book business book that's coming out. It's going to have each business owned. If you're a business owned, you're going to have an asterisk next year business that says you're a veterans owned business. We have a lot of government grants and stuff that we're able to get for a lot of new businesses that come in, that are started out by veterans. Or if you want to hire a veteran, we have programs for that. So it's pretty cool.
We've been speaking here with, of course, you just heard Peter Brown, a business owner, and also he's taken over the helm of the Plymouth Area Chamber of Commerce. Billy Boyle, who is El Presidente for the Pembroke Chamber of Commerce. Gentlemen, as we are winding down, we've got a little less than like 4 minutes left here. Is there a stone during this conversation that I haven't turned over, but you kind of feel is important, is crucial to at least getting the word out to our listeners, our audiences, prospective businesses who may be in Pembroke or in the Plymouth area that may be pondering, you know, joining such an organization as yours to kind of help, not only help them as an organization to network and get to know other businesses and be part of the business community, but also to, you know, be a good Joe or Jane.
Well, I'd say at least reaching out to the Pembroke community. I believe there's roughly 500 businesses or so that are in the Pembroke area. Right now, our membership is around 90 to 100. So again, we're obviously looking to increase that number, to increase the business community that we have with the chamber. And there's obviously a lot of benefits that come along with that, not only specifically to Pembroke, but again, with our memorandum of understanding with the Plymouth Area Chamber, we are able to go to their events, to their educational workshops, the things that they're putting on at member prices. So it's one of those things that you get the benefits of the Pembroke Chamber, you get some of the benefits of the Plymouth Chamber. Mm-hmm. And again, because our areas are so close together, there's a lot of, you know, overlap there where, again, you're bridging the gap of these South Shore communities and just getting to know more people and getting to provide your services to more of the families and people around the area.
Website for the Pembroke Chamber, if folks need to, if they want more information, or maybe they might want to contact you via email, how could they do that?
Yeah, so if you go to pembrokechamber.org, you can get all the information about the chamber there. There's obviously also a button you can click to join the chamber. We update our events and all that, so you can see what's going on, especially, again, second Tuesday. So coming up on the 13th, we have our business after hours with Pembroke Center Liquors at the Historical Society building in Pembroke. So that's sure to be a fun night right before Valentine's Day. So you can come out and pregame with us and get ready for the next day.
Yeah, make sure you get your order of flowers in if you haven't already. Peter, same with you. Anything that I haven't mentioned in regards to how folks can get involved if they want to be a member or if they want to reach out via the website?
So, yeah, you can look us up at PlymouthChamber.com. And then also tomorrow night at the Pembroke Liquor the networking event, there's also going to be Cranberry Vines Catering and Events is going to be supplying the food that night. So it's going to be good.
I just don't, again, folks don't realize that while we're sitting here talking to these two gentlemen about the roles that they're taking on, it's just one of many roles that they do. And I'm sitting here and trumpeting their successes, but this is what people who care about their communities do. And we don't have enough of those people. So again, hopefully you've enjoyed this segment and you've enjoyed at least hearing this information. Anything that we want to say in closing in general, gentlemen, that you want to make sure you want to kind of throw out there? Maybe Bill, you got an upcoming comedy night. Are you going to do a comedy night? Maybe, and you could be the headliner like you are tonight with Monday Night Talk? Because with your dad being, he was actually the opener for the show.
I think it's the first time that my dad's ever opened for me, and I've been the closer. Usually it's the other way around.
Yeah.
Times are changing, but I still, he's got big shoes to fill, so I would never try to, step on him. My dad's a great guy, and again, is
goes
one
without
of my,
saying, and does
he's one of my big role models.
And does a fantastic job here on 959 WATD when it comes to doing sporting events.
That's right.
And again, somebody who, again, he shares his time with the community, whether it's being a selectman. His next endeavor, if he's successful, is town clerk.
Yeah, and he teaches. He's a professor at Quincy College, teaching state and local government. So I don't know where he finds the time. You talk about somebody that might have a clone. I'm pretty sure he does.
But what's even funnier is just knowing that there's been many a times that your dad has pulled me aside with a joke. I can see that you have. You're doing the comedy thing.
Well, we are going to look to do a special comedy fundraiser because obviously the Pembroke Chamber also does a scholarship fund.
Correct.
So we are going to look to have a fun event where we can do a comedy night, raise some money. Whether or not I'm the headliner for that, I would say I'm good, I'm funny.
You'd be the host.
I could be the host. I could do some material and then bring in some people that are much funnier than me where people are certainly going to get their money's worth and make it a worthwhile event.
They'll get their money's worth.
Yeah.
I wouldn't sweat that. But I want to thank you both for being here this evening. And I want to thank you at home or driving in your car for tuning in to Monday Night Talk, heard here from 6:15 to 8. Well, it's time for us to say goodbye. And until next week at 6:15 p.m., have a good evening.